From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Florida State Senate narrowly passed a bill on Monday attempting to address the gun massacre at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, which claimed the lives of 17 students and staff. While the bill includes provisions for a three-day waiting period for all firearms purchases and an increase in the purchasing age to 21, it also bizarrely increases the prevalence of guns in schools. It does so by funding the arming of some teachers and staff as so-called school guardians. On the federal level, little has emerged by way of legislation and congressional debate, despite strong public pressure. President Donald Trump first asserted support for some modest gun safety policies, but then pulled back in line with the National Rifle Association. The NRA has lost tremendous public support in the wake of the Parkland massacre, but instead of softening its tone, the group that relies on gun manufacturers for most of its funding released a video narrated by spokesperson Dana Loesch, issuing a not-so-veiled threat to journalists. My guest is Dennis A. Hennigan, Director of Legal and Policy Analysis at the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, formerly the Vice President of the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. He's the author of Guns Don't Kill People, People Kill People, and Other Myths About Guns and Gun Control. We had him on our program a couple of years ago when that book first came out. Welcome back to the show, Dennis.
Oh, thank you very much, Anali. Nice to be with you again.
I suppose I shouldn't be surprised we would be talking about a gun massacre. Yet again, you wrote your book after the Sandy Hook massacre took place, or was published at that point. Here, after the Parkland massacre, do you see a sea change like we haven't seen before, at least in the public debate about guns?
Well, I really do, Sonali. And I know we need to be cautious about talking in terms of turning points, but because we've been here again. I mean, people thought that after Sandy Hook, that would be a turning point. But there does seem to be a very different feel about this. And one of the unique features of what has happened since the Parkland tragedy is the emergence of high school kids as basically the leaders of the movement towards sensible gun laws. Essentially, you know, these are teenagers who have been personally affected by the insanity that infects our national gun policy, and they're angry about it, and they don't understand why this nation makes so little progress towards ensuring the safety of its citizens, particularly its children, and particularly its children when they're in school. So they understand that our gun policy makes absolutely no sense. They understand that our politicians are spineless, and they understand that a great deal of this tragedy is due to the influence of a single issue lobby, the National Rifle Association, that keeps peddling its myths and intimidating politicians. And these are kids who are willing to stand up to the NRA and stand up to these politicians and demand change.
Now, on Saturday, the Florida State State Senate briefly, for about 15 minutes, decided that they would support a two-year moratorium on sales of AR-15s, which are these semi-automatic rifles of the kind that Nicholas Cruz confessed to using to kill 17 people at that high school, and then immediately pulled that back. Even an assault rifle that has, no other real purpose than to rapidly kill lots of people at or fire lots of rounds at one time, even that was not able to stay in Florida's bill. But isn't there tremendous public support now for doing away with these guns?
There is, and in fact, public support for stronger restrictions across the board on guns is at a high. It hasn't been seen this high since the early 90s when we passed the Brady Bill, we passed the assault weapon ban. And I think in large part it is the cumulative impact of these awful massacres, particularly taking the lives of our young people. Sandy Hook, we saw first graders dying. Now we see 14-year-olds dying. And you know, people are asking, when will this end? Is this a permanent feature of the American landscape that we have to time and time again address these horrendous tragedies? People are just fed up, and these high school kids are saying, why have you adults been electing people to your legislative bodies who do not look out for the interests of their constituents and instead pander to this extremist gun lobby?
Now, Dennis, of course,
the kids don't understand it, and they're trying to get the adults to explain it to them.
Right. Of course, the proponents of gun proliferation would constantly claim that they are all for, you know, they do not want to see kids getting killed. But what they have done over and over again, and unfortunately, relatively effectively, is to perpetuate these myths about guns and gun safety that you take on directly in your book. One, of course, being this idea that a good guy with a gun can be the best or the most effective counter to a bad guy with a gun. And to that end, not only has the Florida state legislature taken up this myth and put it into legislative form, but our president has been pushing it. Let's arm teachers, the supposed good guys in this scenario. So let's talk about the school guardian provision of this bill, which some people have said has been insultingly named for the high school. It's called the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Act. So the bill includes a provision that the Democrats in Florida have been pushing to strip from it, but it's have not had any success. And it would not arm classroom teachers, but any other teachers, you know, say athletic coaches and admin, would allow them to be armed. And it's put aside tens of millions of dollars for such a program. How do you explain that this idea of a good guy with a gun is an absolute myth?
Well, you know, if there has ever been a more effective refutation of that mythology, it is the Parkland shooting. That was a school that actually did have a school resource officer who was armed, and it did not prevent the shooting. It did not reduce the bloodshed. Any kind of policy that is focused simply on what happens after the shooting begins is a policy doomed to failure. We must have sensible policies to keep these guns out of the hands of dangerous people. We should not allow certain kinds of guns, like the AR-15, like the high-capacity magazines that supplied it with that extraordinary firepower. They have no place in civil society. It is time to stop compromising with this gun lobby insanity and to completely reject the notion that the answer to gun violence is more guns, particularly in our schools. That makes absolutely no sense. And these kids have got to continue to lobby the legislature, to talk to the media, to demonstrate in the streets, whatever it takes to get the adults around them to realize that the time for change has come and the time for cowering to the gun lobby has passed.
Now, doesn't the prevalence of guns actually, doesn't research show that the sheer presence of guns increases the likelihood of violence? I mean, rather than, in your book, you point out that even, you know, people who arm themselves with their guns for self-defense have used those guns in the scenarios that people, that the NRA fantasizes about, something like 1 or 2% of the time. Instead, it's far more likely that the guns that are there get into the wrong hands or accidentally fired and end up killing people rather than protecting people.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, just bringing a gun into your home increases the risk of a homicide in the home threefold. It
Wow.
increases the risk of a suicide in the home fivefold. And when you look at the community at large, the states with the highest prevalence of gun ownership have the highest gun death rates. The states with the lowest prevalence of gun ownership have the lowest gun death rates. So this has been demonstrated time and time again. And it's one of the reasons why one of the items on the NRA agenda is to shut down the kind of research that reveals how mythical this NRA thinking is.
So the sheer presence of guns is going to increase the prevalence of gun violence. And yet, of course, what we hear time and time again from the NRA is that any gun control measures are impacting the God-given right, or in their case, constitutional right, to have any guns at any time. What about this, just the issue of raising, just the issue of background checks?
You know, the background check system that we have now is important. It saves lives. It prevents large numbers of criminals and fugitives from getting guns over the counter. But we need to strengthen it. We need to strengthen it a great deal. And we need to move towards a system where there is a real evaluation of an individual's dangerousness, his actual threat, his or her actual threat to the community, before we entrust that individual with a gun. The current system puts a premium on making sure that that the person applying for the gun gets his gun right away. The premium is on speed. It's not on the thoroughness of the background check. So we need to move away from a system that emphasizes the speed of the check and towards a system that emphasizes a real comprehensive evaluation of the dangerousness of the person who wants a gun. So that, for example, the authorities would know before the sale went through that this 19-year-old alleged shooter in Parkland had demonstrated all kinds of red flags and propensities towards violence and threats to the community for years and years. And the authorities would, if they had known that, would never have entrusted him with a gun. Our current laws are so weak that despite all these red flags, there was actually no legal basis to deny this shooter a gun. And that the blame for that lays directly at the doorstep of the NRA and the politicians who do its bidding.
Now, Dennis, so you mentioned earlier that there is a correlation between states with the strongest gun safety laws, gun control laws, and the prevalence of gun violence. But of course, the favorite example, counterexample to any assertion like that by the NRA and its supporters is Chicago. Look at Chicago, the city with the strongest gun laws, and yet some of the highest rates of gun-related homicides. How do you counter that?
Well, you have to look at where the guns being used in crime in Chicago come from. They don't come from Chicago itself, which has strong gun laws. They come from neighboring jurisdictions and even as far as the states of the South with weak gun laws. Those guns are trafficked from those southern states up to victimize cities like Chicago. It also happens to cities in the Northeast like Boston, New York, Washington, Philadelphia, which argues for a national system of strong gun controls that will prevent that kind of trafficking from areas with weak gun laws into areas with strong gun laws. You know, Chicago can do everything it possibly can to prevent gun violence, but it can't reach out and stop the flow of guns from states like Mississippi.
Now, at the federal level, there's been very little action, as I mentioned, and we were just talking about comprehensive background checks. Donald Trump, in his usual fashion, sort of first will say something knee-jerk that may sound like it makes sense to him, and then his advisors who want him to take stronger positions, you know, take him aside, have a word, and he changes his mind. We saw that on immigration, and we've seen this now on the issue of gun violence. He tweeted about wanting to push background checks for gun buyers. He's tweeted about raising the minimum age for gun purchases. For our TV audience, you can see his tweet right there. He said after the meeting with lawmakers, he changed his mind. He basically repeated the line about how gun-free zones are proven targets of killers, which implies that earlier myth we were discussing, a good guy with a gun can stop a bad guy with a gun. What do you make of this flip-flopping on the issue of gun violence? He seemed to, you know, when we strip away all the NRA propaganda, it doesn't seem so complicated.
Well, you know, I think that we have seen this pattern with President Trump on other issues as well.
Yeah.
He likes to play to the cameras. He likes to seem reasonable, willing to entertain all kinds of different ideas. And often it is the last person he talks to that will actually reflect his position at any given point in time, and that position may change at a later point in time. It's very frustrating, but I would say to the U.S. Congress, there is no reason to wait for President Trump to figure this out. It ought to be clear to every member of Congress that our current gun laws are completely inadequate, that their constituents are not protected, that kids are going to continue to be threatened, and kids are going to continue to die in our schools and elsewhere unless we get this problem under control. And that means summon up a modicum of courage and stand up to this extremist NRA. And you don't need to wait for President Trump to do that. So take action, Congress. Present the president with a bill, and let's see if he signs it, or let's see if he defies the impassioned pleas of those Parkland teenagers.
What do you make of the video that the latest video, I should say, that NRA spokesperson Dana Loesch has released? She's emerging as the new face of the NRA and has released a number of bizarre, threatening, dramatic videos set to dramatic music, often featuring, you know, B-roll footage of violent scenes. In the case of the latest video, it's just she on a black background wearing a black shirt and an hourglass that she turns to say that your time is up. But she's actually even named some journalists in this by name, such as Joanne Reed. And many have referred to what she has done as an outright threat to journalists. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it's reprehensible, but it is sort of classic NRA propaganda. It is designed to play to their base. It is designed to keep their hardcore ideological gun owners in a constant state of anxiety and exploit their resentment of what they regard as coastal elites who look down their noses at gun owners. This is the long-standing narrative of the oppressed and despised gun owners, which is part of the NRA mythology. But the problem is that when you invoke this kind of threatening rhetoric, you know, you don't know how it's going to be interpreted by that hardcore ideological gun owner, who it may actually convince them that these coastal elites that despise the way of life of the rural gun owner are actually getting ready to come for their guns. Right. And you never know what that might lead to. But this is the kind of thing the NRA has done before. When Wayne LaPierre called the agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms jackbooted thugs.
Yes, jackbooted government thugs. Yeah.
Jackbooted thugs simply because they were enforcing the nation's gun laws. That was part of what inspired Timothy McVeigh to blow up that federal building in Oklahoma City, a building that housed the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
Right.
So you just don't know what kind of forces you're going to unleash with this kind of incendiary rhetoric. And it really is reprehensible.
Yeah. And you know, the idea is that they represent this vast constituency among the American public. Exact figures about NRA membership are in flux. They claim they have 5 million members. But now there's reports that they don't purge their roles of people who've died. So if you're an NRA member and you die, you still are counted as a member. People have tried to leave the NRA, but keep getting NRA mail in their mail, and you know, seem to be retained as a member. Meanwhile, of course, the majority of their funding, you know, where did they get all this money from that they used to then buy off politicians? Apparently a majority of it coming from gun manufacturers. If they were simply a trade association of gun manufacturers, they couldn't use the sort of propaganda they do about representing people. I want to get finally your comments on Kellyanne Conway's remarks about Donald Trump and the NRA. I mean, Trump has been so shameless about supporting attacking the NRA. Any other president would have tried to distance himself and not appear to be so beholden to essentially what is a special interest group. But Kellyanne Conway said on last Friday that Trump understands the overlap between gun owners and those voters who supported him. And she said that there will be broad agreement between the president and the NRA, absent perfect alignment. And that sounds like any relationship. I mean, they're not even ashamed of the president being so beholden to the NRA.
No, not at all. I mean, the NRA spent some $30 million to elect Donald Trump president. And he basically went before them and said, you know, you help me, I'm going to help you.
Yes.
Quid pro quo. For Donald Trump, I don't know what the NRA would have to do to become too toxic for the president. But hopefully the NRA is becoming too toxic for other elected representatives, particularly some of these Republicans who have been taking NRA money and are now faced with the reality that they have allied themselves with an organization that engages in this kind of incendiary rhetoric and that stands in the way of common sense gun laws that can save countless lives. So there needs to be a reckoning here. There needs to be a rethinking by those who have traditionally allied themselves with the NRA. They have to ask themselves, is it really worth it? The NRA's political clout has been vastly exaggerated. There have been many politicians who have stood up to the NRA and been reelected. And we've seen some in Florida who have crossed the NRA in the wake of the Parkland shooting. So hopefully this will be a tipping point where the NRA will just become too toxic for too many of our politicians to retain the kind of intimidating clout that they have had in the past.
Dennis, is there a website you recommend where people can learn more about gun control issues?
Well, they can certainly go to my website, which is called LethalLogicTheBook.com, and learn a little bit more about the book that I have written that essentially takes on each of these NRA myths that continue to be repeated to this day, and demonstrates that those myths are contrary to the facts, contrary to logic, and contrary to common sense.
Well, we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me again, Sonali.
Dennis A. Hennigan is the Director of Legal and Policy Analysis at the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, formerly the Vice President of the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. We've been discussing gun control policies in Florida and the federal government. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.